Okay, we will go ahead and get started for this session. Welcome, everyone. My name is Scott Presson. I'm the past chair of the oral health section and the moderator for this session. The community health planning and policy development section and the oral health section would like to welcome you to this session, 4201.1, titled Implementing the Affordable Care Act, the Changing Role of Public Health, Countdown to 2014. The oral health section and the community health planning and policy development section would encourage you to get more involved in our section activities if you have the interest. You can stop by our business meetings or visit our booths in the exhibition hall. You can also join our section, or either section, as a additional section. You're allowed a second section at no additional cost. There is a sign-up sheet for the CHPPD section over by the projector here if you'd like to get more involved with their section. I'd also like to point out that this session was organized by the Community Health Planning and Policy Development and the Oral Health Section. I'd like to thank the session organizers, Elena Ung of CHPPD and Peggy Timothy of the Oral Health Section. The objectives of this session are to discuss the impact of the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, on population health services, in particular on maternal and child health, mental health, and oral health, discuss the impact of the ACA on public health financing, and explain why public health investments at the federal, state, and local levels need to be increased. For those of you seeking continuing education credits, there are credits for physicians, nurses, health educators, and other public health certifications through the APHA online system. For continuing dental education credits, we have a pilot program this year where you can do some paper evaluations of the sessions and pay a separate fee to get continuing dental education. And Peggy Timothy, our co-moderator, is in the back with an envelope if you're interested in seeking those credits. Those would need to be turned in to the CE desk in the main lobby by Wednesday at noon or mailed to the APHA address on the envelope. This session has been endorsed by the following sections: alcohol, tobacco, and other drugs, health administration, law, mental health, and medical care, and by the following caucuses: Asian and Pacific Islander Caucus for Public Health, Black Caucus of Health Workers, the Latino Caucus, the Men's Health Caucus, and the Women's Caucus. So it appears there's been a lot of interest in this session. Okay. I'll now introduce all four members of this outstanding panel. I know you probably share my interest in hearing what they have to bring to us today to update us on the status of this important legislation and how it is going to impact our public health work. We will hold questions until the end, so if you have a question, make note of it so you can ask during that question period. Our first speaker today is Nicole Berta. Nicole is the Manager of Government Relations for APHA. She's responsible for promoting APHA's legislative agenda and coordinating the grassroots activities of APHA, including working with APHA's Action Board, state affiliates, and sections on the annual Public Health Action Campaign. Nicole has worked at the local, state, and federal levels in public health, and most recently worked as a Congressional Hispanic Caucus Institute Fellow with the U.S. Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee. And her presentation is titled Protecting Public Health Funding, Including the ACA's Prevention and Public Health Fund. Our second speaker will be Karen Langdahem. Karen is with the Association of Maternal and Child Health Programs. She's a senior advisor. They're located in Washington, D.C. Karen has over 20 years' experience in health policy with expertise in child and family systems, maternal and child health, and public insurance coverage. She is a senior advisor at the Association of Maternal and Child Health Programs and on the University of Illinois Chicago School of Public Health faculty. In 2000, she received the APHA Young Professional Award for Outstanding Leadership in MCH and is a past secretary of the MCH section. Her presentation is entitled Opportunities and Strategies for Improving Maternal and Child Health Through the ACA. Our third speaker will be David Shilcutt. David is with the Office of Policy Planning and Innovation at the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, also known as SAMHSA, in Rockville, Maryland. He is an attorney on the health reform team. He's a public health analyst and has previous experience with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And his presentation is entitled Countdown to January 1, 2014, Mental Health and the Affordable Care Act. And our fourth speaker is Burton Edelstein. Burton is a pediatric dentist, founding chairman of the Children's Dental Health Project, which is a DC-based oral health policy and analysis organization. He is professor of dental medicine and health policy and management at Columbia University Medical Center in New York. And at Columbia, he chairs the social and behavioral sciences at the College of Dental Medicine. His work focuses on policy and research levers to improve children's oral health equity and dental care availability. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Nicole.
Thanks for lowering that down about a foot for me. So welcome. Thank you all for being here, especially during lunchtime or nap time, whatever you prefer, around 12:30. I'm happy to be here joining you and to talk about protecting the Affordable Care Act and public health funding. And as you know, the ACA passed in 2010. We were hoping that was the end of it, but that's definitely not the end of the fight for the Affordable Care Act and also not for health reform. So I want to talk about why it's so critical to continue supporting it and advocating for it and looking at the general funding scope for public health right now. I'll also mention some of the resources and tools we have at APHA to help you out and with your advocacy efforts. So with that, I want to take a bit of a step backwards to look at public health funding in general before we dive into the ACA. Public health has sustained some major cuts over the years. Since 2010, public health agencies such as CDC and HRSA have experienced major cuts. For example, since 2010, HRSA has been cut by about 22%. The Budget Control Act of 2011 imposed caps on discretionary programs, which are those public health programs that we all care about. And the reason these caps were in place was to reduce spending. The goal was to reduce funding by more than $1 trillion over the next 10 years. In addition to that, the Budget Control Act established a Joint Select Committee on Deficit Reduction, also known as the Super Committee. They turned out to not be so super in their activities, and they failed to come up with a solution. So with that, that triggered a mechanism called sequestration that took across-the-board cuts, indiscriminate cuts, to all of the programs, discretionary programs out there, of about 5%. And With that, I also want to look at all federal spending in general. For federal spending, as you see up here on the chart, it's about $3.7 trillion. Health discretionary spending is a very small portion of that. It's about 1.5% of the federal budget. With that, only half of that goes to public health activities. The other half goes to research, such as work at the NIH. So even if Congress decided to cut all of public health, we would still have a deficit, and as we all know, that short-term saving would, in the long run, add to the deficit with chronic diseases increasing and whatnot. And I'd also like to mention that sequestration was not just 1 year. It was not just this past year, fiscal year 2013. It's in place for the next 8 years until fiscal year 2021, unless Congress acts and stops that mechanism from taking place. So it's absolutely critical to speak out now, especially the more it's in place, the easier it'll be to stay there and it'll become the norm, and that's not what we want. So now looking at the Prevention and Public Health Fund within the ACA, it was created by the ACA, and it was the nation's first mandatory funding stream dedicated to improving public health. This means that it doesn't have to go through the appropriations process that's become so painful for Congress to try to figure out what to do with public health funding and funding in general on a yearly process. So we were thinking, great, now public health, there's a stream that's slightly protected. It's going to be sustained, it'll be stable, and it'll be protected from reduction or elimination on an annual basis. This funding has already it's been used, and it's being used to support community and clinical prevention, workforce and infrastructure, research and tracking. And also I'd like to point out that it was intended to support new programs or supplement existing programs, not supplant. It was not meant to fill in or backfill or stop the bleeding from the cuts being taken to other agencies out there, which it has been used over the last few years. And it's also under constant attack. I think it marks the 49th time that the House has voted to either repeal, divert funding from, or somehow defund part of the ACA and the Prevention Fund. So as I mentioned, the fight is far from over, and that also includes when Congress decided to completely shut down the government over this one piece of legislation, essentially. So now looking at how much money is in the Prevention Fund, and as I was creating this slide, I was thinking, okay, how much money is there? Then I was like, well, we need to take a step back again. How much money was supposed to be there? Ooh, mood lighting. It's getting sexy in here now. Okay. So, how much supposed to be there? We got robbed. So, there was supposed to be $18.75 billion between FY 2010 and FY 2022. And then after that, it was supposed to be $2 billion in there every year after that. So, as you see in FY 2010, it started at $500 million. And then it ramped up over the years. Okay. So then the light blue, that's the difference. The dark blue is actually where we are now. So the light blue is essentially what's been taken out. So what happened here? In February 2012, $6.25 billion was cut over 9 years to offset the planned cut to Medicare physician payments, which you might hear of as the doc fix. And then this past year, in FY 2013, $51 million was cut by sequestration. That was your 5.1% cut across the board that they took. And then, in addition to that, a large chunk was diverted to insurance enrollment activities, which only left $616.5 million for your traditional prevention activities. So that compared to what was originally supposed to be there, what we expected to be there in FY 2010, it was about a 50% cut. It was originally supposed to be about 1.25 in FY 2013. So I thought we'd move on from the doom and gloom to look at a few of our successes so far that we've seen, because there have been already some strong successes and a lot of great work that has been done with the Prevention Fund. And I think it's important to continue talking about these successes and talk about them with the public and talk about them with your members of Congress. The successes have been across the board in smoking cessation, immunizations, disease screening, expanded mental health and injury prevention, nutrition, and physical activity promotion. And I wanted to highlight two of the programs that the funding has gone towards. So the Tips from Former Smokers National ad campaign was launched in March 2012 by the CDC, and it was the first ever paid national tobacco education campaign to encourage people to quit smoking. And they had many hard-hitting ads showing real people living with real and painful consequences of smoking. These ads ran for about 12 weeks on TV, radio, print, online. They were everywhere, and they were funded in part by the fund. And there were the successes. 1.6 million smokers attempted to quit, and 200,000 did quit as a result of these ads. The second example I have here is the Diabetes Prevention Program. It's an intensive lifestyles change program that was created to help people that are at high risk for diabetes. And it's done through trained lifestyle coaches that use a curriculum focused on diet, exercise, and behavior change. And they've also showed some huge successes, reducing the risk for developing diabetes by 58%. So now I'd like to discuss why advocacy is so important. Advocates are essential in protecting the fund. There's the opportunity to really shape the national debate and to share these success stories, the success stories of the programs that you're either working in or that are happening in your community. And you have the opportunity to really educate the public and to educate your members of Congress, to demonstrate how important these programs are in your state and district. And then as public health professionals, you really are seen as a credible source, and you become a resource for the staff, along with also being a constituent of that member of Congress. And this also applies to not only the Prevention Fund and not only the ACA, but much broader to all of the public health programs that you care about. So I think, as we've all seen, there's definitely this budget climate and partisan environment that we're dealing with that's even more poisonous than we've seen in the past. And as always, members of Congress have to prioritize programs. And the tighter the budget is, the more they're prioritizing. And that's why it's also extremely critical for us to create this unified voice to support critical public health programs. And that's not saying that we want to pit one program within public health against another. It's not HIV programs versus maternal child health programs. But if we have this unified voice, then we can push for a bigger pie, so every slice within that pie is also larger. It's also important to support the champions of public health, and also if there are unsupportive members of Congress, they also need to hear from constituents. You need to hold their feet to the fire, not to let them go quietly when they vote against things that hurt public health. And as I've mentioned, Congress was willing to shut down the government over the ACA, and they've been hammered by constituents about not staying strong and not blocking Obamacare. We've heard that messages of opposition are at a ratio of 100-1, not in our favor. So it's critical that as Congress is entering into the next phase of negotiating the budget, that they have positive reinforcement, that they hear thank you, and that they know that their vote was not for nothing, and that their constituents and the public health professionals out there are in support of it, so that in hopes that they have the courage to again stand up for what's right for the public's health. And with that, I wanted to mention a few ways of how you can get involved. There are four main ways: through correspondence. You can either do phone calls, letters, emails, action alerts. There are public events that you can attend, such as town halls, public meetings, local events. And media is also another great way to garner support and really shape the debate, using letters to the editor, op-eds, radio shows, and social media. And then also taking advantage of meetings, whether you're living in D.C., visiting D.C., or when your members of Congress are in recess and back home, or even just meeting with their staff as well in the district office. And take advantage of inviting them to visit your program as well so they can see what this program looks like on the ground and how it's really impacting their community that they're representing. Just to mention a few of our resources that we have on APHA's website, it's at apha.org/advocacy, and it can be a little overwhelming. We have a ton of great resources up there, and in preparation, I was looking through all of our resources, reminding myself what was up there, and I always impress myself with the information we have. So there's a lot up there, and so I just wanted to run through a few of the things so you know what is available to you and how to use it. There are multiple tips on the rules of advocacy, how to engage with your member of Congress, just appropriate manners, pretty much like any other relationship you're going to have. But there are some good reminders in there, such as just if you have a different position than your member of Congress, you don't need to back down. You can respectfully tell them why you disagree, that you disagree and why. We also have some sample letters to members of Congress on APHA's key priority legislative and advocacy issues, such as gun violence prevention, public health funding, the Clean Air Act, and the Farm Bill. So you can pretty much grab all of that, plagiarize it all you want, and send it to your member of Congress, or even better, you can incorporate some information from your specific field within public health, or also stories are a great way to reach your members of Congress, stories about how these programs are working and people they're reaching in their state and district. We also have some information on how to schedule a Hill visit and the tips on do's and don'ts when you're meeting with a member of Congress, along with some sample phone scripts if you can't meet with a member of Congress. Give the office a call, and there's a template for different ideas of what to say to your member of Congress. We also have tips and questions on what to ask if you're going to a town hall, and then some other guidance on lobbying restrictions. A few other tools and resources are state fact sheets. Every year we update fact sheets on each state, what money is going to the state for public health activities, and then also just the landscape of public health for the state and what challenges lay ahead for each state. We have fact sheets on multiple different issues, the prevention fund, public health funding, and other key activities, and then also reports and issue briefs. Every February, we publish in the Nation's Health, we publish a vote record, which will give you a good idea and snapshot of how your member of Congress voted on those key public health issues for the year. We give them a percentage, if they're kind of a pass-fail, 20%, 80%, 100%, how they're voting in favor of our issues, and then also compare it to the previous year to see if they're improving or not improving, and that'll give you a good idea of where they stand so that when you engage with your member of Congress, you have a good understanding of where they are and how they voted. Every month, we also turn out a legislative update. It summarizes what's happening in Congress and what's coming down the pike, and we put this in nice plain English so it's easy to understand, and follow up also with calls, so every month we have calls in case you have any questions about the information that's in there. And I'm sure many of you have received, we bombard you with requests to take action. It's extremely simple to do, and it's as easy as just filling in your contact information. If you are able, if you have the time, I know everybody's extremely busy. If you have the time to personalize it, it's great. If not, you can just send it along. And I do want to stress that these are important. It's easy to think that You know, what does it matter if one more person does it, or if I don't do it, maybe my colleague will do it. But it's extremely crucial because, as I mentioned, they are paying attention to the ratio of opposing versus supporting. A lot of offices on the Hill are counting it up weekly, either at the end of the week, the beginning of the week, and they send that a memo to their boss, the member of Congress, saying, look, 100 people are supporting, nobody's coming out in opposition, or vice versa. So it's extremely important to bolster the other side in support of public health. And with that, we also have the Public Health Action Campaign. I hope most people are familiar with it, and this is very redundant for you. If not, this is something we've been doing over the last few years and will continue to do. It's a annual congressional summer recess grassroots advocacy campaign, and we really work to engage affiliates, APHA members, and other public health advocates out there. And we provide a toolkit wrapping up all of our tools and resources into a one-stop shop and with some additional advocacy resources to help you advocate and support the key priority issues. This past year, we really focused in on increasing funding for public health, protecting the Prevention and Public Health Fund, and also moving along legislation for gun violence prevention. And I just want to wrap up with talking about a few of the successes we had from this past year. Our members and affiliates were extremely engaged. We had multiple letters to legislators going out on funding in general, public health funding. There were congressional meetings being held across the country on these issues. And also, many LTEs, letters to the editor, and op-eds were being published across the state. We had about 15 letters to the editor, and it's estimated that has about a 2 million readership unique impressions. So there's really the opportunity to shape the national debate when it comes to public health and funding. And we also provide those tools, template LTEs, so you can just grab from that and send it to your local media office. And with that, I will turn it over to Karen.